Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan in an updated modern English. The third stage. Now in my dream, the highway on which Christian was to travel was fenced in on both sides with a wall called salvation. The burdened Christian ran up this way with great difficulty because of the load on his back. He ran like this until he came to a place where the road climbed up a small hill. At the top of the hill stood a cross, and a little below at the bottom was a stone tomb. In my dream, just as Christian came up to the cross, his burden loosened from his shoulders and fell off of his back. It tumbled, and continued to do so, down the hill until it came to the mouth of the tomb, where it fell inside and was seen no more. Christian was so glad and overjoyed, and in his excitement he said, "He has given me rest by his sorrow and life by his death." He stood still for a little while and looked with astonishment at the cross. It surprised him that the sight of the cross released him of his burden. He looked and looked again as tears ran down his cheeks. Now as he stood looking and weeping, behold, three shining ones approached him and greeted him with, "Peace be to you." The first of the shining ones said to him, "Your sins are forgiven." The second stripped Christian of his rags and clothed him with a complete change of clothes. The third placed a mark on Christian's forehead and gave him a scroll with a seal upon it. The third shining one said, "Look on this as you run, and deliver it when you arrive at the gate of the celestial city." With that, the shining ones went their way. Christian jumped for joy, leaping into the air three times, and went on his way singing, "Thus far did I come, burdened with my sin. No one could ease this grief that I was in, until I came here. What a place this is. Is this place the beginning of my blessedness? Is this the place a burden fell from my back? Is this a place where the strings that bound it to me broke? Blessed cross, blessed sepulchre, blessed rather be the man who there was put to shame for me." I saw in my dream that Christian continued on his way until he came to the bottom of the hill. There he saw three men fast asleep next to the road with chains attached to their heels. The name of the first was Simple, the second was Sloth, and the third was called Presumption. When Christian saw the three pilgrims sleeping on the ground, he walked over to them, hoping he might be able to awaken them. He said, "You are like those who sleep on the top of a mast, for the Dead Sea is under you, a gulf that has no bottom. So wake up and get moving. If you are willing, I will help you get your shackles off." He also told them, "If he who goes about like a roaring lion comes by, you will certainly become a prey to his teeth." With that, they glanced at him and replied like this, "I see no danger," Simple said. "Just let me sleep a little more," said Sloth. And Presumption said, "Every tub must stand upon its own without the need of assistance." And so the three of them lay down again to sleep, and Christian decided it best to continue on his way. But it troubled Christian to think of the three men in such obvious danger. It also bothered him that they didn't appreciate the kindness he freely offered them. First of all, he awoke them, plus he volunteered to help them off with their shackles. As Christian reflected on his troubling encounter, he spotted two men tumbling over the wall on the left-hand side of the narrow way. They hurried to catch up to him. The name of the one was Formalist, and the name of the other Hypocrisy. Like I said, they caught up to Christian, and he started a conversation with them. "Gentlemen," Christian said, "where did you come from, and where are you going?" Formalist and Hypocrisy explained that they were born in the land of vainglory, and were going to Mount Zion to receive praise. Christian looked from one man to the other and asked, "Why didn't you enter in at the gate, which is located at the beginning of this way? Don't you know that it is written, 'He who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber.' John 10, verse 1. "That may be true," they said. "However, our countrymen have agreed that this gate you mention is too far away. So we usually just make a shortcut of it and climb over the wall at this point just as we have done." Krishna looked at the wall and back at his new traveling companions. "Won't this custom of yours be looked at as a trespass against the Lord of the celestial city to which we are headed, and so be considered a violation against his revealed will?" Formalist and Hypocrisy said, "You don't have to trouble yourself about that. Our manner of climbing over the wall is a well-established custom. In fact, many witnesses have testified that it is an accepted route, which has been well-established. The real question is, will your established practice stand up to investigation in a court of law?" Krishna asked. "We believe so," the two men assured Krishna. "Our tradition has been accepted for a long time, more than 1,000 years. Without a doubt, it will be admitted as a legal ordinance by any impartial judge. And from a practical standpoint, what difference does it make how we got on this way, as long as we got on it? If we are in, we are in. From what you have told us, you're in by way of the wicket gate, and we by tumbling over the wall. So what makes your present condition any better than ours?" "I walk by the rule of my master," Krishna explained. "You, however, walk by the uninformed working of your imagination. You are already considered thieves by the Lord of the way. Therefore, I have little doubt that you will not be found to be legitimate travelers at the end of the way. You enter by your own devices without his direction, and you will leave by yourselves without his mercy." To this they made almost no answer, other than to tell Krishna to mind his own business. "Then in my dream I saw each of the men continue to walk with Krishna without talking much with one another, except that they explained their laws and ordinances to Krishna. We are as conscientious and obeying them as you," they said. "Therefore we don't see where you differ from us, except for the coat you are wearing. Most likely that was provided by your neighbors to hide your shameful nakedness." Their words troubled young Krishna. He said, "You will not be saved by obedience to laws and ordinances, since you did not come in by the door. And as for this coat I wear, it was given to me by the Lord of the place where I go, the celestial city. You are right that it was given to me to cover my nakedness, and let me say that I accepted it as a token of kindness to me, for I had been dressed in nothing but rags. Besides, it brings me comfort as I travel. I think about how the Lord will recognize me when I come to the gate of the celestial city, because I wear his coat, a coat he gave me freely in the day that he stripped me of my rags. And perhaps he didn't notice it, but I have a mark on my forehead. One of my Lord's most intimate associates placed it there the day my burden fell off my shoulders. I'll tell you this, too. They also gave me a sealed scroll to read for comfort as I go on the way, as I was told to turn it in at the celestial gate, a token of my authorization to enter. However, I doubt you want any of these things since you didn't enter in at the gate." When he said this, they didn't answer him, but only looked at each other and burst out laughing. Then I watched as they all pressed on. But Krishna walked on ahead of them. He decided to walk alone and not to talk with these strangers any longer. Instead, he talked to himself, sometimes with great sighs and sometimes voicing contentment. As he traveled, he was often refreshed by reading the scroll that one of the Shining Ones had given him. They all went on till they came to the foot of the hill. At the bottom of the hill stood a spring in an intersection with two other roads besides the one which came straight from the wicket gate. One road turned to the left, and the other to the right at the bottom of the hill, but the narrow way continued straight up the hill called Difficulty. Krishna walked over to the spring and drank to refresh himself and then started running up the hill. He said, "Though the hill is high, I still desire to walk up it. I don't care how difficult it is, because I understand that it leads to the way of life. Cheer up, heart, and don't grow faint or fear, because even if it is difficult, it is better to go this way, because it is the right way. For while the wrong way is easier, it ends in anguish." Formalists and Hypocrisy also arrived at the foot of the hill. They paused to consider the hill and how steep and high it was, as well as the fact that there were two alternative ways to go. They assumed that these two easier ways would meet up with the narrow way on the other side of the hill and decided to each choose one of the alternative roads. The name of one of those roads was Danger, the name of the other, Destruction. So one turned to take the way called danger, which led him into vast woods, and the other took the way to destruction, which led him into a wide field full of dark mountains, where he stumbled and fell, never to rise again. I looked toward Christian to see how far he had made it up the hill, but the steepness of the hill had caused him to slow his pace from running to walking, and from walking to clambering on his hands and his knees. Now, about halfway to the top of the hill, Christian came to a pleasant, shady resting place made by the Lord of the Hill for the refreshment of weary travelers. So as Christian reached this resting place, he sat down to rest a while. While he sat, he pulled a scroll from his chest pocket to read it for comfort and reassurance. He paused to take a fresh look at the new coat that had been given to him when he stood by the cross. After reading and being encouraged, he grew drowsy and fell fast asleep, and was delayed there until it was almost sunset. While he slept, his scroll fell out of his hand, and someone came up to him and shook him to wake him. The person said, "Go to the ant, you sluggish person. Consider her ways and be wise," Proverbs 6, verse 6. At this, Christian arose with a jolt and started on his way, racing ahead until he came to the top of the hill. Now, when he reached the top of the hill, two men came running toward him in full flight from the opposite direction. The name of the one was Timorous, and the other, Mistrust. Christian greeted them with a question, "Sirs, what's the matter? You're running the wrong way." Timorous answered, "We were going to the city of Zion, and made it up this hill difficulty. But the further we go, the more danger we encounter. So we decided to turn around and are returning home again." Mistrust nodded his agreement. "Yes, this is true. Just ahead of you, lying directly in the way, are a couple of lions. We weren't sure if they were awake or asleep, but we couldn't bear to think of what would happen if we came within their reach. They'd pull us in pieces." Christian looked wide-eyed at the two men. "You make me afraid," he admitted. "But on the other hand, where else would I flee for safety? If I go back to my home in the city of destruction, it is destined for judgment and awaiting fire and brimstone. I would certainly perish there. However, if I can get to the celestial city, I am sure to be safe there. I must press onward. To go back is nothing but death. But to go forward, though I may fear death, life everlasting is beyond it. I will still go forward." Mistrust and Timorous just shook their heads and ran down the hill, while Christian continued forward on his way. As he went, Christian pondered what he had heard from these men, and he felt for the scroll in his pocket so he might read it, to be assured and comforted. To his surprise, his fingers searched his empty pocket. The scroll wasn't there. Panic filled him, and he became very distressed. He didn't know what to do, for he had turned to the scroll for relief from his fears. Plus, it was his authority for entering into the celestial city. At this point, he became so perplexed he didn't know what to do. Then he remembered falling asleep at the shady resting place, halfway up the hill difficulty, and figured out what happened. He fell to his knees and asked God for forgiveness for his foolish neglect. Then, without delay, he went back down the hill to look for his scroll. His heart was full of sorrow every step of the way. Sometimes he sighed, sometimes he wept, and he often chided himself for being so foolish as to fall asleep in that place. After all, it had been established for the purpose of modest refreshments from his weariness. He traveled back down the hill further and further, carefully looking on this side and on that. His eyes eagerly searched for any sight of the scroll which had given him comfort so many times in his journey. He continued his downhill journey until he reached a shady resting place where he sat and slept. At the sight of this place, his sorrow multiplied with a fresh reminder of his evil of sleeping. So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us be alert and sober, for those who sleep do their sleeping at night, and those who get drunk at night. But since we are of the day, let us be sober, having put on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet the hope of salvation. 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 6 to 8. In this way, he went on regretting his sinful sleep, saying, "Oh, wretched man that I am, that I should sleep in the daytime, that I should sleep in the midst of difficulty. A small sob escaped his lips with his breath. That I should so indulge myself as to allow rest for the ease of my flesh. To sleep in the place which the Lord of the Hill built only for the relief of the spirits of pilgrims. I have taken these needless steps even in the same manner as Israel was required to do. It was for their sin that they were sent back again to wander in the wilderness by way of the Red Sea. In the same way, I am forced to walk this way again with sorrow, a way which should have only been walked with delight had it not been for this sinful sleep. How much further along I might have been on my way by this time. Instead, I am forced to walk these steps three times instead of once. And now the night is about to overtake me, since the day is almost spent. Oh, if only I had not slept. By this time he had finally arrived at the shady resting place again, where for a while he sat down and wept. He remained downcast until at last his eyes fell upon the scroll. His fingers trembled with excitement as he snatched it up and thrust it into his pocket next to his heart. I can't begin to say how joyful Christian was when he recovered his scroll. For the scroll was the assurance of his life and acceptance at the desired sanctuary of the celestial city. So with the scroll safely tucked away in his pocket, he thanked God for directing his eye to the place where it lay, and with joy and tears he focused on moving forward in his journey. Oh, how nimbly he climbed the rest of the hill. Yet before he reached the top, the sun had set upon Christian. It made him all the more aware of the foolishness of his sleeping, and how it had delayed him. He again began to grieve. How sinful you are, O sleep! Because of you my journey, which should have been in the light, has been overtaken by the night. I must walk without the sun. Darkness covers the path of my feet, and now I must listen to noises of miserable creatures, all because of my sinful sleep. Now the story Mistrust and Timorous had told him came to mind, along with how they were frightened by the sight of the lions. Then Christian said to himself, "These beasts prowl in the night for their prey. If they should meet up with me in the darkness, how can I possibly avoid them? How can I escape being torn in pieces by them?" He nervously went on his way, growing more and more jittery as he went. While he complained about his unhappy circumstances, he lifted up his eyes and spotted a regal palace directly ahead of him. The name of it was the Palace Beautiful, and it stood to one side of the highway. In my dream, Christian hurried along the way toward the palace, in hopes that he might get lodged there. However, before he had gone far, he entered in a very narrow passage, which is about 220 yards long, off the porter's lodge. He carefully proceeded through the restricted path, keeping his eyes alert as he went. And there he spotted two lions standing in the way. He thought, "Now I see the danger that caused Mistrust and Timorous to turn back and flee." The lions were chained, but he couldn't see the chains that constrained the ferocious beasts. Fear filled him, and he thought about going back, just as they did, because at that moment he thought there was nothing ahead of him but death. But the porter at the palace lodge, whose name was Watchful, noticed Christian's hesitation, and that he looked as if he might go back. The porter cried out to him, "Is your strength and courage so small? Don't be afraid of the lions, for they are chained. They are placed there to test your faith at this point in your journey. They also show clearly those who have no faith. So stay in the middle of the path, and you will not be harmed." Then I saw Christian go forward, though he still trembled with fear of the lions. He took care to follow the porter's directions and stayed to the middle of the path. The lions roared and snarled, but they did no harm to him. He clapped his hands with joy and went on until he stood before the palace gate, where the porter awaited him. Then said Christian to Watchful, "Sir, what is the purpose of this house, and may I stay here for the night?" The porter answered, "This house was built by the Lord of the Hill, and he built it for the relief and security of pilgrims." The porter looked directly at Christian and asked, "Where are you from and where are you going?" "I've come from the city of destruction," Christian said, "and I'm going to Mount Zion. But now the sun has set. I would like, if I may, to stay here tonight. What is your name? Now my name is Christian, but originally my name was Graceless. I was born of the race of Japheth, whom God will persuade to dwell in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant. Genesis 9, verse 27. The porter's eyes narrowed. But how is it that you have arrived so late? The sun has already set. Christian looked away for a moment, too ashamed to meet the porter's eyes. I would have been here sooner, but worthless man that I am, I slept in a shady resting place that stands on the hill Difficulty. Even in spite of that, I would have been here much sooner, except that while I slept, I lost my scroll of certification. When I reached the top of the hill, I felt for it in my pocket. When it wasn't there, my heart was filled with sorrow, and I was forced to go back to the place where I had overslept. I finally found it there and pressed forward on my journey once again. Now at this hour, I have come this far. The porter said, "Well, I will call you out one of the virgins of this place. If she likes what you have to say, she will invite you to join the rest of the family, according to the rules of the house." So watchful, the porter rang a bell. At the sound of the bell, a serious but beautiful young woman named Discretion came out of the door of the house and asked, "Why have you called me?" The porter answered, "This man is on a journey from the city of destruction to Mount Zion. But he's weary, and seeing that the sun has set, he asked if he might stay here for tonight. So I told him I would call for you, and that after talking with him, you would decide what seems best according to the rules of the house." Then asked Christian, "Where are you from, and where are you going?" He told her. And she also asked him how he got into the way, and he told her. Then she asked him what he had seen and met with in the way, and he told her all that is well. Lastly, she asked his name. He said, "My name is Christian, and I have a greater desire to stay here tonight now that I understand this place was built by the Lord of the Hill for the relief and security of pilgrims." So she smiled, and tears brimmed in her eyes. After a slight pause, she said, "I will call for two or three more of the family." So she ran to the door and called to Prudence, Piety, and Charity, who came out to meet him. Following a little more conversation with him, they invited him inside to meet the rest of the family. Many of them met him at the threshold of the house and warmly welcomed him inside, saying, "Come in, you who are blessed of the Lord. This house was built by the Lord of the Hill specifically for the purpose of entertaining pilgrims such as you." Christian bowed his head in respect and followed him into the house. Once inside, he sat down and they gave him something to drink. They agreed that until supper was ready, to make the best use of time. Some of them should have a conversation with Christian regarding specific matters. So Piety, Prudence, and Charity were chosen for this discussion, and they began to talk with him. "Come, Christian," Piety said, "since we have shown love to you and received you into our house tonight, let's talk about all things that have happened to you in your pilgrimage. Perhaps talking about these things will help us better ourselves." "I'm thankful for your goodwill, and I am glad your attitude is so friendly," Piety asked. "What made you decide to take to a pilgrim's life in the first place?" "I was driven from my native country by a dreadful message that unavoidable destruction would consume me if I continued to live in the city of destruction." "But how did it happen that you came from your country in this direction?" she asked. Christian told her that it was what God wanted. "For when I was fearful of destruction hanging over me, I did not know which way to go. But by chance a man by the name of Evangelist came to me as I was trembling and weeping. He directed me to the wicket gate. If he hadn't, I would never have found it. And so he pointed out the way that has led me directly to this house." Piety's brow furrowed in thought. "But didn't you come by the way of the house of the interpreter?" "Oh, yes," Christian nodded, eager to share the experience. "The things I saw there are most memorable. They'll stick with me as long as I live. Three of the things I saw especially made an impact. The first is how Christ, in opposition to Satan, maintains his work of grace in the heart. The second is how the man in the iron cage has sinned himself quite out of God's hope and mercy. And the third is the dream of the man who thought in his sleep that the day of judgment had come." Did you hear him tell his dream? Yes, Krishna said. I thought it a dreadful revelation. It made my heart ache as he told it, and yet I am glad I heard it. Was this all you saw at the house of the interpreter? Krishna shook his head. No. He took me to a place where he showed me a stately palace and how the people in the palace were dressed in gold. Then a courageous man cut his way through the armed men who stood at the door to keep him out. And once he did, he was commanded to come inside and win eternal glory. My heart and mind were totally overwhelmed at the sight of these things. I would have stayed at the good men's house for a year, except I knew I had further to go. What else did you see along the way? See? Well, I had only gotten a little further when I saw one, as if in my mind, hanging upon a tree, bleeding. The very sight of him made my burden fall off my back, for I'd grown under a heavy burden, but it dropped off my back just like that. He snapped his fingers. I'd never seen such a thing, and it surprised me. While I stood looking up, for I couldn't stop looking, three shining ones came to me. One of them declared that my sins were forgiven. Another stripped off my rags and gave me this embroidered coat I'm wearing, and a third set the mark you see upon my forehead and gave me this sealed scroll. He pulled the scroll from his pocket and showed it to her. But you saw even more than this, didn't you? Krishna thought about it for a second and said, "The things I have told you were the best, but I did see some other interesting things. For instance, I saw three men, simple, sloth, and presumption, lying asleep beside the way by which I came. They wore shackles upon their heels. But do you think I could awaken them? It was almost impossible. I also saw formalist and hypocrisy come tumbling over the wall instead of entering by the wicket gate, and they pretended to be headed to Zion, but they were quickly lost. And even though I warned them, they would not believe. However, the hardest thing for me was getting up this hill, and it was equally difficult to muster the faith to get by the mouths of the lions. I'm telling you, if it hadn't been for the good man Watchful, the porter who stands at the gate, I'm not sure that I wouldn't have gone back down the hill. But I thank God I am here, and thank you for receiving me." Prudence jumped into the conversation and said, "I have a few questions I'd like you to answer. First, do you sometimes think of the country from which you came?" "Yes," he let out a sigh, "but not with fondness. I think of where I came from with much shame and loathing. And the truth be told, if I'd yearned for that country, I might have taken opportunity to return there by now. Instead, my heart desires a better country, that is, a heavenly one." Prudence took in a deep breath and let it out slowly. "Don't you carry some memories of the things you did there and the people you talked to?" "Yes, I do, but greatly against my will, especially deep inside my carnal thoughts and reasoning. You see, all my countrymen, as well as myself, delighted in debating about such things, but now all those things only grieve me. If I could control my thoughts, I would choose never to think of those carnal things ever again. But even if I was able to do that, which is best, that which is worse would still live within me." Prudence tilted her head slightly to the side. "Did you sometimes find that those things related to personal carnality were overcome, yet at other times were cause for great puzzlement and confusion?" "Sure, but those times of victory over carnality happened infrequently. However, when they did happen, it was truly golden. When you experience such precious times in overcoming carnal annoyances, can you remember how you obtained these victories?" "Yes, there are several means. For instance, when I think and meditate on what I saw at the cross, that will do it. And when I look at my embroidered coat, that will do it. Plus, when I read and study the scroll I carry in my pocket next to my heart, that will do it. When my thoughts are warmly stimulated about where I am going, that will do it also." Prudence pressed him further. "And what is it that makes you so desirous to go to Mount Zion?" Krishna's eyes grew wide and dreamy. "Why, I hope to see him alive who hung dead on the cross. And, and there I hope to be rid of all the things that remain as an annoyance to me. There at the celestial city they say there is no death. There I shall dwell with such companions as I like best. For to tell you the truth, I love him because he released me from my burden, and I am weary of my inward sickness. In view of this, I prefer to be where I shall die no more, and in the company of others who shall continually cry, Holy, holy, holy. Charity glanced around and looked back at Christian. Why didn't you bring them along with you? He hung his head and wept. Oh, how willingly would I have brought them. I have a wife and children and neighbors, but all of them were utterly against my going on pilgrimage. Charity pursed her lips. But you should have talked to them and should have attempted to show them the danger of staying behind. Christian gestured with his palms up as he shrugged. I did. He let his arms drop. I also told them what God had shown to me about the destruction of our city. But they looked at me like one telling a joke, and they didn't believe me. And did you pray to God that he would bless them with understanding of your warning to them? Oh, yes, he nodded fervently. I prayed with much love. You must know that my wife and poor children were very dear to me. But did you tell them of your own sorrow and fear of destruction? I expect that the prospect of destruction was clear enough to you. Christian ran his finger through his hair. I did. Again and again and again. They could also see my fears were very real by my expression, by my tears, and also in the way I trembled under the anxiety of the judgment that hung over our heads. But even all this wasn't enough to get them to come with me. But why on earth wouldn't they come? What did they have to say for themselves for why they would not come? Christian wiped his hand across his face and looked at the ground. Well, for one thing, my wife was afraid of losing what she has in this world. And my children? He looked up at Charity. Well, they were absorbed with the foolish pleasures of youth. So because of these types of things and other distractions, they left me to wander in this distressed frame of mind alone. The young woman's face grew more serious. So, with all your efforts to persuade your loved ones to depart from the city of destruction and come with you, did your futile, empty manner of life discourage them from acting on your advice? Christian's lips drew into a grimace. I admit I cannot commend my life. I am well aware of my many failings. I also know that a man, by the way he lives his life, can quickly invalidate whatever arguments or advice he presents to others for their own good. Yet this I can say, I was very careful to avoid behavior on my part that would be considered disgraceful. I hope to avoid giving them any excuse that would turn them against the idea of going on this pilgrimage. In fact, for this very behavior, they criticized me, saying I was too strict, and that I denied myself things for their sakes in which they saw no evil. I can honestly say that if what they saw in me hindered them, it was my own great kind-heartedness in being careful not to sin against God or of doing any wrong to my neighbor. Charity's head bobbed slightly in understanding. Even as you say, Cain hated his brother because his deeds were evil, and his brothers were righteous. And if your wife and children have been offended at you for this reason, they show themselves to be unyielding toward what is good. You have delivered your soul from accountability for their blood. Now I saw in my dream that they sat talking together like this until supper was ready. When it was time to eat, they sat down to a table filled with good, substantial foods and robust wine. All their conversation around the table was about the Lord of the Hill and included what he had done and the purpose behind it. For instance, they talked about why he had built that house. By what they said, I understood that he had been a great warrior and had fought with and slain him who had the power of death, but not without great danger to himself, which made me love him all the more. Christian continued the conversation as he ate. For, as they said, and as I believe, he lost a lot of blood doing this. But he did it all in the glory of grace and with a motive of pure love for his country. Besides this, some of the others around the table said they had spoken with him following his death on the cross. Plus, they testified that they had heard from his own lips that he is such a lover of poor pilgrims that no one else is like him in the whole world. To make their point, they give an example of how he had stripped himself of his glory, so he might do this for the poor. Those who had heard from him confirmed that he would not live in the mountain of Zion alone. They also talked of how he had made many pilgrims and the princes, even though by nature they were born beggars and their nature originated from the dunghill. In this way they spoke together till late at night, and after they had committed themselves to their Lord for protection, they each went to bed. They put Christian up in a large upper bedchamber with a window that opened towards the sunrise. The name of the room was Peace, where he slept until dawn. When he awoke that morning, he sang joyfully, "Where am I now? Is this a love and care of Jesus for the men that pilgrims are? Thus to provide that I should be forgiven and dwell already next the door to heaven?" So in the morning they all got up, and after more conversation they told Christian he should not leave until they had shown him the distinctive features of that place. For they brought him into the study where they showed him records of the greatest antiquity. There in my dream they showed Christian the bloodline of the Lord of the Hill. It showed that he was the son of the Ancient of Days and came from an eternal generation. These records also revealed more fully the deeds he had done and the names of many hundreds whom he had recruited into his service. They also showed how he had placed them in such a dwelling that would never pass away by undergoing decay or the passing of time. Then they read to him some of the notable deeds performed by some of his servants, including how they had subdued kingdoms, brought about righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, and escaped the edge of the sword. Yet out of weakness they were made strong and became valiant in the fight, and turned foreign armies to flight. Then they read another part of the records of the house, which revealed how willing their Lord was to receive any person, no matter what kind of person they were, into his favor. This even included people who had in the past offered excessive insults to his character and accomplishments. These several other historical documents provided accounts of many other famous events, which Christian also viewed. These records included things both ancient and modern, along with prophecies and predictions concerning specific manners that are certain to be fulfilled, both to the dread and amazement of enemies, and the comfort and relief of pilgrims. The next day they brought Christian into the armory, where they showed him a variety of military weapons which their Lord had provided for pilgrims. There was a sword, shield, helmet, breastplate, all prayer, and shoes that would not wear out. The great supply was enough to outfit as many men for the service of their Lord as there are multitudes of stars in the heavens. They also showed him some of the military equipment which some of his servants had used to accomplish wonderful things. They showed him Moses' rod, the hammer and nail with which Jael slew Sisera, the pitchers, trumpets, and lamps, too, with which Gideon put the Midian armies to flight. Then they showed him the ox goad which Shamgar used to slay 600 men and the jawbone with which Samson did such mighty feats. They also brought out the sling and stone with which David slew Goliath of Gath, and the sword their Lord would eventually use to kill the man of sin on that day of final victory over the predator. Besides these items, they showed him many excellent things that delighted Christian very much. They finished at the end of the day. They went back to bed again. Then I saw in my dream on the following day that Christian got up expecting to head out on his journey. But those in the palace invited him to stay for one more day. They said, "If the day is clear, we will show you the Delectable Mountains, for they will further add to your comfort, because they are so much nearer to the Celestial City than where you are now." So he agreed to stay, and the next morning they brought him to the top of the house and said, "Look south." When he did, he saw a range of very pleasant mountains a great distance away. They were covered with beautified woods, vineyards, fruits of all sorts as well as flowers. Springs and fountains flowed freely, and the place was very appealing to look at. Christian asked, "What is the name of the country?" "Emmanuel's land," they said. "For true pilgrims, it offers the same character as this hill on which the palace is located. When you go there, from that vantage point you may see the gate of the Celestial City which the shepherds who live there will make appear." Now he gave thought to leaving the next day and of making preparations, but his companion said, "First, let us look back into the armory." So they did. And when Christian walked into the room, they equipped him from head to foot with fully tested weapons, just in case he should be assaulted on the way. Once he was well outfitted, he walked out with his friends to the gate. There he asked a porter, "Have you seen any pilgrim pass by?" The porter answered, "Yes, I have." "Tell me, do you know his name?" Christian asked. "I did ask him his name, and he told me it was Faithful." "Oh, I know him," Christian said. "He is my townsman, my near neighbor. He comes from the place where I was born, the city of destruction. How far do you think he is ahead of me?" The porter thought for a moment and said, "By this time he has probably passed beyond the foot of the hill." "Well, good porter, the Lord be with you and increase your blessings for all the kindness you have shown me."